Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 94-year-old Lester Burgwart of Henderson, Nevada, originally from Hamburg, New York, where the Erie County Fair is held every August. It's the second largest fair in New York and the fourth largest county fair in North America. It dates back over 200 years now. And I understand those 266 acres of the fairgrounds are actually really close to where you grew up. And I guess the fairgrounds there even gave rise to your entrepreneurial spirit long before you enlisted in the Navy in World War II?
Oh, that was directly across the street from my folks' farm. Yeah, that was quite an opportunity. It so happened that my folks had very good relationship with the operator of the racetrack. The races would go on for 70 days every summer. And that was a little special thing that happened in New York State. I had the first program station inside the main gate, and I got so much, I don't know, maybe a nickel for every program I sold for 25 cents.
Uh-huh.
That was big money. Golly, between that and selling newspapers before school to the stables, and then I bustered some neighbor kids to sell the newspaper in the evening in the grandstand. Altogether, maybe I could make $1,100 in the summer, and that was as much or more than some of the superintendents for the factories that were still working. It was big money.
Yeah.
And that was part of the joy of living where I was, because there were no other teenagers my age and my position who were able to take advantage of that fairgrounds.
And so you started to tell me about when you joined the V5 program, but was there a reason that you were set on the Navy and that you wanted to avoid being drafted into the Army? Was there something that crystallized in your mind that made that decision for you?
Hey, I had all of the woodsy activity that I wanted. I sloshed in snow and mud and so forth. That was the picture I had of the Army. The Army Air Corps, that was beyond my mental capability. At least that's the way I figured. I didn't have the reach to get that. I chose the Navy. I'm glad I did. I never had to crawl through mud. I always had a clean bed to sleep in, which were two things that the Army had that I didn't want.
And you told us you're at Swarthmore, and it's a little challenging for you, and you weren't thinking that this is the path to being an officer necessarily. You just thought this wasn't for me, so you asked them to transfer you out so you wouldn't flunk out. Is that how you said it?
That's essentially it. My folks were not college people. Yes, I said my cousin was a mentor. Yes, but not at arm's reach. He was not there, but only on rare occasions. But I had him up on a pedestal, and I figured, gee, this dumb farm kid would never be able to reach that. The school I attended was great. I had a choice, I mean an opportunity, to have my biology teacher or my chemistry teacher to teach physics. My chemistry teacher, I swear, just overlooked us dumb farm kids. He was more in tune with the kids in town. The biology teacher, he talked my language. We got along great. But when it came to class assignments, I wound up getting the chemistry teacher. I walked into that class, and oh my gosh, I'm going to have a year with that guy? No way. And I walked out and went into the principal's office and said, Mr. Leader, and that was his name, please transfer me out of that physics class and I'll take general shop as my elective. And that was the best move I'd ever made, because that gave me a chance to work with real woodworking equipment. I learned to solder and do electrical circuits and so forth, things I did not have the opportunity to experience or learn on the farm. Yes, I dropped physics, but since then I've taken summer school, a summer of physics in Seattle and another summer in Berkeley. So I've had my fill of physics. However, that did not help me in that physics class at Swarthmore. And I knew I wasn't going to cut it, that I was going to flunk it. So I bailed out and went to the active Navy before they bumped me. Does that make sense?
It does, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but the folks who keep hearing you refer to yourself as a dumb farm kid may be surprised to know that you've earned a doctoral degree, and maybe we'll get to that story before we're done. So you go out of this V5 program, which was putting young men who had enlisted in the armed forces in college to work academically before they would serve on active duty and earn a commission. You transfer out of that. And what did the Navy do with you? Where did they send you?
Well, I was in school in a learning situation, and I mean a formal education, virtually my entire 3 years. It was in just the last 6 months of my experience with the torpedo bomber squadron that I could see, oh my goodness, active duty is coming up. And this is when it was, will we or will we not have to invade the homeland islands?
Before we get to that, tell me about the process. When you left Swarthmore, where did you go next?
Then I went into boot camp. They selected individuals in from boot camp to go to various schools. I said I wanted to go to aviation machinist mate school. They sent me to Norman, Oklahoma. That's just across the runway from University of Oklahoma.
So what kinds of things did you learn?
How to work the time an aircraft engine, how to change parts, how to safety wire, how to run up an aircraft to check it out pre-flight. It was a great school. For a teenager, wow, that couldn't have been better. But from that group of people, the Navy selected those of my stature to go into aerial gunnery school, which I had the privilege, if you want to call it that, of doing that down in Miami. So I wound up as a turret gunner on a T, that's T as in Tom, B as in Baker, M, torpedo bomber. I faced backwards. I had a radioman down below and the pilot up front. Well, anyway, that's where I spent my last few months in the Navy, was in an operational training unit. We were preparing to go into the homeland islands.
And what is it like to fly in one of those TBM Avengers when you can't see where you're going and you're facing backwards?
Ah, that's fantastic. For a 17, 18-year-old, it couldn't have been better. It was great. 300 miles an hour at a 45-degree glide. What a thrill. Yeah, there are a few people who were injured and so forth, but I enjoyed it. Yes, I did. At the very end, one of the last flights I made, had to fly with a pilot who was in remedial training, let's call it that way. He was having difficulty in dropping bombs where they were supposed to be. Long story short, in a glide bomb, in a bombing run, the bombardier, which I was flying as that day, would call out the elevation from 10,000 feet down to 5,000 and give the pilot the word to pull out in case he was busy doing other things. Instead of this pilot continuing his glide, when he saw he was overshooting, he pushed forward on the stick, which caused the aircraft to develop negative G's. And you don't fly an aircraft pulling negative G's. He realized he was in error and pulled back on the stick. So everything that was up there on the overhead, the ceiling, everything that was loose met the aircraft coming back up to it. And I was unfortunate enough to be one of those objects. I wound up having compression fractures in 5 vertebrae. My lumbar, my entire lumbar region was sort of messed up. And being a big, brave guy, I picked up my chute out of the aircraft and went on to my evening meal. I never checked in with the medics because had I been run over to the hospital, I would have missed getting out of the Navy. This happened in January, and I was slated to get out in May. For some dumb reason, I was bent on getting out, which was, well, it was a dumb move on my part. I should have checked in and had the medics work me over and see what was wrong.
Let me ask a few questions about this. So you'd been doing this for a while. This was not your first practice flight in one of those TBMs.
My pilot got bumped because he and a couple other pilots decided that they would do a loop. The TBM was not designed for that kind of activity. And when this skipper found out about it, for some reason or other, those three pilots, including my pilot, were bumped from the squadron. Well, anyway, I wound up in this pilot aircrew pool where we had to fly these misfits.
I want to dig down on this because I want to understand the timing. So you had gone in 43, you're in the V5 program, then you go to aviation machinist mate school, you go to aerial gunnery school, and I'm sure in that they probably had you shooting at sleeves that are being tugged from other planes or shooting at moving targets, right?
Right.
Learning how to lead whatever your target is and all of that. So you've been through all of this, and I'm sure you're thinking, hey, I'm going to be going overseas and shooting at the Japanese, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was your expectation.
Yes, indeed.
And you were on track to do that until your pilot and two other pilots broke the rules. And where was that? Where were you when that happened?
We were at Barbers Point, Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
Just out of Honolulu.
So that's the next step to being in a combat theater. You're halfway there.
Oh, yeah. We were eager to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was an expert on that machine gun with that turret. I'm a sharpshooter with that machine gun. But we're raring to go ahead trying our skills. I mean, here, we've been trained all along, and there it is. What's going to happen? Well, the bomb was dropped, or the bombs were dropped. And although President Truman, and this is politics, has been criticized by many people for dropping those bombs or authorizing that, it saved so many lives. Had we had to go into the homeland islands of Japan, it would have been a horrible situation.
And
but hey, we were ready to do it.
And when the time that you spent stationed in Hawaii, had you seen Pearl Harbor? Could you still see some of the indications of what had happened there?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Nevada, the battleship Nevada, was put aground deliberately to keep it from sinking in the channel. And it's a landmark over there. This is Nevada Point. This is where the battleship Nevada was grounded deliberately. Okay? There was one ship that was still over on its side. I'd never seen the bottom of a battleship, but it's round. So anyway.
So you saw all that.
Yeah,
when
it was
you got
there.
And you guys are doing exercises from Naval Air Station Barbers Point.
Yeah.
Practicing to go overseas. And if you had been part of that, you would have been flying those glide bombing missions against heavily defended areas where you're not just firing your machine guns, they're firing at you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
How did you feel about that possibility?
You know, I don't think I had no thoughts about that. And I'm certain most of the men I was with. Hey, we were the best shots. We were going to survive. We were going to be the winners. There's no question about it. We were infallible. We couldn't be touched.
And so explain to me what it was that happened there at Barbers Point that stopped you from being deployed overseas. You guys were just up on a routine patrol or training mission when your pilots pulled that trick?
I was looking down at the ground.
Did you know he was going to do that?
Yes and no. his two buddies had done that, and says, "Okay, Stu, when are we going to do that?" Well, we were all kind of by ourselves that day. All of a sudden, he started down, picking up speed, and oh my goodness, that's what the Earth looks like, upside down. Yeah, the aircraft did a good job. True, the wings did get a few little bumps in it when they flexed, but hey, that was 18-year-old riding there. Troubles will only happen to other people, never to us. This is the philosophy or the outlook, the mental, yeah.
What does that do to your stomach?
Hell, it's no trouble at all. It's just great.
But so then you bring that TBM back in, and somebody says, "Shame on you, you guys weren't supposed to do that, and you're out of here?" Or how did that go?
Well, we were not privy to the discussion between the skipper and those pilots, but I can well imagine what the heck happened, okay? First of all, we had a Marine Corps major as our squadron commander.
And what, that was VC-14, is that what you said?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Which was not unusual, but my pilot was a Mustang. He started out as an enlisted man and became a major in the Marine Corps. And I guess that does not set too well with the commissioned officers who have done the bookwork and received a direct commission. So anyway, I can imagine our CO commander read the Riot Act to those three guys. It was never discussed, but as I say, all of this, and now we get bumped.
Those three pilots and their crews are dismissed from the squadron. What did the squadron do? Where did the squadron go?
The squadron went on aboard carrier and were standing off the Japanese islands, ready to do their thing.
Did they leave you in Hawaii, or did they send you?
Yeah,
left
we
you
were
in Hawaii.
Left in Hawaii.
And so then you become crews for pilots who had had trouble, who were trying to earn their stripes still and prove they can handle it. And that's when you end up on this flight where you were injured.
Yes.
I want to make sure we better understand that situation and the ramifications, but it's break time again. Lester Bergwart of Henderson, Nevada is our guest today. He'll turn 95 just before Memorial Day. He spent nearly 30 years in uniform of one kind or another, and he spent the last 75 years dealing with the effects of that injury suffered in his TBM Avenger. It hasn't stopped him from a life of service and significance, and we'll learn more about that when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.